"Look at them," said Mr. Savoy. "They're not trolls. They move like some kind of engine. Doesn't that interest you?"
"No," said Cohen vacantly. "Abstract thinking is not a major aspect of the barbarian mental process. Now, where was I?"
He sighed. "Oh, yes, you two. You'd rather die than betray your emperor, would you?" The two men were rigid with fear now. Cohen raised his sword. Mr. Savoy took a deep breath, grabbed Cohen's sword arm, and shouted,
"Then open the gates and let him through!"
There was a moment of utter silence. Mr. Savoy nudged Cohen.
"Go on," he hissed. "Act like an emperor."
"What? You mean giggle and have people tortured? That sort of thing? Blow that."
"No. Act like an emperor ought to act."
Cohen glared at Savoy. Then he turned to the guards.
"Well done," he said. "Your loyalty does you... what's the name? Credit. Keep on like this, and I can see it's promotion for both of you. Now, let us all go inside, or I will have my flowerpot men chop off your feet, so you'll have to kneel in the gutter while you're looking for your head."
The men looked at one another, threw down their swords, and tried to kowtow.
"And you can bloody well get up, too," said Cohen, in a slightly nicer tone of voice. "Mr. Savoy?"
"Yes?"
"I'm emperor now, am I?"
"The Earth soldiers seem to be on our side. The people think you've won. We're all alive."
"I'd say we've won, yes."
"If I'm emperor, I can tell everyone what to do, right?"
"Oh, indeed."
"Properly, you know, scrolls and stuff. Buggers in uniform blowing trumpets and saying, 'This is what he wants you to do.'"
"Ah, you want to make a proclamation?"
"Yeah. No more of this bloody kowtowing. It makes me squirm. No kowtowing by anyone to anyone, all right? If anyone sees me, they can salute or maybe give me some money. But none of this banging your head on the ground stuff. It gives me the willies. Now, dress up that in proper riding."
"Right away. And
hang on, haven't finished yet."
Cohen bit his lip in unaccustomed cogitation as the red warriors lurched to a stop.
"Yeah. You can add that I'm letting all prisoners go free unless they've done something really bad, like attempted poisoning for a start. You can work out the details. All torturers have to have their heads cut off, and every peasant can have a free pig, something like that. I'll leave you to put in all the proper curly bits about by order and stuff."
Cohen looked down at the guards.
"Get up," I said. "I swear the next bastard that kisses the ground in front of me is going to get kicked in the antique chicken coops. Okay, now, open the gates."
The crowd cheered. As the horde stepped inside the Forbidden City, they followed in a sort of cross between a revolutionary charge and a respectful walk. The red warriors stood outside. One of them raised a terracotta foot, which groaned a little, and walked towards the wall until it bumped into it. The warrior staggered drunkenly for a while and then managed to get within a yard or two of the wall without colliding with it. It raised a finger and wrote, shakily, in red dust that turned to a kind of paint on the wet plaster,
"Help, help, it's me. I'm out here on the plain. Help, I can't get this bloody armour off."
The crowd surged along behind Cohen, shouting and singing. If he'd had a surfboard, he could have ridden on it. The rain drummed heavily on the roof and poured into the courtyards.
"Why are they all so excited?" he said.
"They think you're going to sack the palace," said Mr. Savoy. "They've heard about barbarians, you see. They want some of it. Anyway, they like the idea about the pig."
"Hey, you!" shouted Cohen to a boy struggling past under the weight of a huge vase. "Get your thieving paws off my stuff. That's valuable, that is.
It's a Sang dynasty," said Mr. Savoy.
"That's right," said the vase.
"That's a Sang dynasty, that is. Put it back. And you lot back there,"
he turned and waved his sword,
"get those shoes off. You're scratching the floor. Look at the state of it already."
"You never bothered about the floor yesterday," Truckle grumbled.
"'Twern't my floor then."
"Yes, it was," said Mr. Savoy.
"Not properly," said Cohen. "Right of conquest, that's the thing.
Blood. People understand blood. You just walk in and take over and no one takes it seriously. But seas of blood? Everyone understands that.
Mountains of skulls, said Truckle approvingly.
Look at history, said Cohen. Whenever you... Hey, you, the man with the hat, that's my...
Inlaid mahogany Shibo Yangkong sand table, murmured Mr. Savaloy.
Yeah, so put it back, do you hear? Yes, whenever you comes across a king where everyone says, ooh, he was a good king, all right, you can bet your sandals he was a great big bearded bastard who broke heads a lot and laughed about it, eh? But some king who just passed decent little laws and read books and tried to look intelligent, ooh, they say, oh, he was all right, a bit wet, not what I call a proper king. That's people for you.
Mr. Savaloy sighed. Cohen grinned at him and slapped him on the back so hard he stumbled into two women trying to carry off a bronze statue of Lee Tin Weedle.
Can't quite face it, Teach, can you? Can't get your mind round it. Don't worry about it. Basically, you ain't a barbarian. Put that damn statue back, missus, or you'll feel the flat of my sword, so you will.
But I thought we could do it without anyone getting hurt. By using our brains.
Can't. History don't work like that. Blood first, then brains.
Mountains of skulls, said Truckle.
There's got to be a better way than fighting, said Mr. Savaloy.
Yeah, lots of them, only none of them work. Caleb, take those...
Fine bong jade miniatures, muttered Mr. Savaloy.
Yeah, take them off that fella. He's got one under his hat.
Another set of carved doors was swung open. This room was already crowded, but the people shuffled backwards as the doors parted and tried to look keen while avoiding catching Cohen's eye. As they pulled away, they left six beneficent winds standing all alone. The court had become very good at this manoeuvre.
"Mountains of skulls," said Truckle, not a man to let go in a hurry.
We saw the Red Army rise out of the ground, just as the legend foretold. Truly, you are the pre-incarnation of One Sun Mirror.
The little taxman had the decency to look embarrassed. As speeches went, it was on a dramatic level with the one that traditionally began, "As you know, your father, the king." Besides, he'd never believed in legends up till now. Not even the one about the peasant who every year filed a scrupulously honest tax return.
"Yeah, right,"
said Cohen. He strode to the throne and stuck his sword in the floor where it vibrated.
"Some of you are going to get your heads cut off for your own good," he said. "But I haven't decided who yet. And someone show Boy Willie where the privy is."
"No need," said Boy Willie. "Not after them big red statues turned up behind me so sudden."
"Mountains of sc..."
Truckle began.
"Don't know about mountains," said Cohen.
"And where,"
said Six Beneficent Winds tremulously,
"is the Great Wizard?"
"Great Wizard?" said Cohen.
"Yes, the Great Wizard who summoned the Red Army from the Earth,"
said the taxman.
"Don't know anything about him," said Cohen.
The crowd staggered forward as more people piled into the room.
"They're coming."
A terracotta warrior clomped its way into the room, its face still wearing a very faint smile. It stopped, rocking a little, while water dripped off it. People had crouched back in terror, except the Horde, Mr. Savaloy noticed. Faced with unknown yet terrible dangers, the Horde were either angry or puzzled. Then he cheered up. They weren't better, just different. "They're all right facing huge, terrible creatures," he told himself, "but ask them to go down the street and buy a bag of rice and they go all to pieces."
"What's my move now, Teach?" Cohen whispered.
"Well, your emperor," said Mr. Savaloy, "I think you talk to it."
"Okay."
Cohen stood up and nodded cheerfully at the terracotta giant.
"Morning," he said. "Nice bit of work out there. You and the rest of your lads can have the day off to plant geraniums in yourselves or whatever you do. You got a number one giant I ought to speak to?"
The terracotta warrior creaked as it raised one finger. Then it pressed two fingers against one forearm, then raised a finger again. Everyone in the crowd started talking at once. The giant tugged one vestigial ear with two fingers.
"What can this mean?"
said Six Beneficent Winds.
"I find this a little hard to credit,"
said Mr. Savaloy, "but it is an ancient method of communication used in the land of blood-sucking vampire ghosts. You can understand it?"
"Oh, yes, I think so. You have to try and guess the word or phrase. It's trying to tell us, one word, two syllables. First syllable sounds like..."
The giant cupped one hand and made circular handle-turning motions with the other alongside it.
"Turning," said Mr. Savaloy.
"Winding? Reeling? Revolve? Grind? Grind? Chop? Mince?" The giant tapped its nose hurriedly and did a very heavy, noisy dance, bits of terracotta armour clanking.
"Sounds like mince," said Mr. Savaloy. "First syllable sounds like mince."
A ragged figure pushed its way through the crowd. It wore glasses, one lens of which was cracked.
It said, "I've got an idea about that."
Lord Fang and some of his more trusted warriors had clustered on the side of the hills. A good general always knows when to leave the battlefield, and as far as Lord Fang was concerned, it was when he saw the enemy coming towards him. The men were shaken. They hadn't tried to face the Red Army. Those who had were dead.
"We regroup," panted Lord Fang, "and then we'll wait until nightfall. And what's that?"
There was a rhythmic noise coming from the bushes further up the slope, where sliding earth had left another bush-filled ravine.
"Sounds like a carpenter, my lord," said one of the soldiers.
"Up here, in the middle of a war? Go and see what it is."
The man scrambled away. After a while, there was a pause in the sawing noise. Then it started again. Lord Fang had been trying to work out a fresh battle plan according to the 9 useful principles. He threw down his map.
"Why is that still going on? Where is Captain Nong?"
"Hasn't come back, my lord."
"Then go and see what happened to him."
Lord Fang tried to remember if the great military sage had ever had anything to say about fighting giant invulnerable statues. The sawing paused. Then it was replaced by the sound of hammering. Lord Fang looked around.
"Can I have an order obeyed around here?" he bellowed.
He picked up his sword and scrambled up the muddy slope. The bushes parted ahead of him. There was a clearing. There was a rushing shape on hundreds of little There was a snap. The rain was coming down so fast that the drops were having to queue. The red earth was hundreds of feet deep in places. It produced 2 or 3 crops a year. It was rich. It was fecund. It was, when wet, extremely sticky. The surviving armies had squelched from the field of battle, as red from head to toe as the terracotta men. Not counting those merely trodden on, the Red Army had not in fact killed very many people. Terror had done most of their work. Rather, more soldiers had been killed in the brief inter-army battles, and, in the scramble to escape, by their own sides. Friendly stab, as it is formally known. The Terracotta Army had the field to itself. It was celebrating victory in various ways. Many guards were walking around in circles, wading through the clinging mud as if it was so much dirty air. A number of them were digging a trench, the sides of which were washing in on them in the thundering rain. A few were trying to climb the walls that weren't there. Several, possibly as a result of the exertion following centuries of zero maintenance, had spontaneously exploded in a shower of blue sparks, the red-hot clay shrapnel being a major factor in the opposition's death count. And all the time, the rain fell, a solid curtain of water. It didn't look natural. It was as though the sea had decided to reclaim the land by airdrop. Rincewind shut his eyes. Mud covered the armour. He couldn't make out the pictures anymore, and that was something of a relief because he was pretty certain he was messing things up. You could see what any warrior was seeing, at least presumably you could if you knew what some of the odder pictures actually did and how to press them in the right order. Rincewind didn't, and in any case, whoever had made the magic armour hadn't assumed it would be used in knee-deep mud during a vertical river. Every now and then it sizzled. One of the boots was getting hot. It had started out so well, but there had been what he was coming to think of as the Rincewind factor. Probably some other wizard would have marched the army out and wouldn't have been rained on, and even now would be parading through the streets of Hung Hung while people threw flowers and said, "My word, there's a great wizard and no mistake." Some other wizard wouldn't have pressed the wrong picture and started the things digging. He realised he was wallowing in self-pity. Rather more pertinently, he was also wallowing in mud. And he was sinking. Trying to pull a foot out was no use. It didn't work, and the other foot only went deeper and got hotter. Lightning struck the ground nearby. He heard it sizzle, saw the steam, felt the tingle of electricity, and tasted the taste of burning tin. Another bolt hit a warrior. Its torso exploded, raining a sticky black tar. The legs kept going for a few steps and then stopped. Water poured past him, thick and red now that the river Hung was overflowing. And the mud continued to suck on his feet like a hollow tooth. Something swirled past on the muddy water. It looked like a scrap of paper. Rincewind hesitated, then reached out awkwardly with a gloved hand and scooped it up. It was, as he'd expected, a butterfly. "Thank you very much," he said bitterly. The water drained through his fingers. He half-closed his hand and then sighed, and as gently as he could, manoeuvred the creature onto a finger. Its wings hung damply. He shielded it with his other hand and blew on its wings a few times. "Go on, push off." The butterfly turned. Its multifaceted eyes glinted green for a moment, and then it flapped its wings experimentally. It stopped raining. It started to snow, but only where Rincewind was. "Oh, yes," said Rincewind. "Yes, indeed. Oh, thank you so very much." Life was, he had heard, like a bird which flies out of the darkness and across a crowded hall, and then through another window into an endless night again. In Rincewind's case, it had managed to do something incontinent in his dinner. The snow stopped. The clouds pulled back from the dome of the sky with astonishing speed, letting in hot sunlight which almost immediately made the mud steam.
"There you are! We've been looking everywhere!"
Rincewind tried to turn, but the mud made that impossible. There was a wooden thump, as of a plank being laid down on wet ooze.
"Snow on his head? In bright sunshine," I said to myself. "That's him, all right."
There was the thump of another plank. A small avalanche slid off the helmet and slid down Rincewind's neck. Another thump, and a plank squelched into the mud beside him.
"It's me, Twoflower. You all right, old friend?"
"I think my foot is being cooked, but apart from that, I'm as happy as anything."
"I knew it would be you doing the charades," said Twoflower, sticking his hands under the wizard's shoulders and hauling.
"You got the wind syllable," said Rincewind. "That was very hard to do by remote control."
"Oh, none of us got that," said Twoflower, "but when it did, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, I'm going to die, everyone got that first go. Very inventive. You seem to be stuck."
"I think it's the magic boots."
"Can't you wriggle them off? The mud dries like, well, like terracotta in the sun. Someone can come along and dig them out afterwards."
Rincewind tried to move his feet. There were some sub-mud bubblings, and he felt his feet come free with a muffled slurping noise. Finally, with considerable effort, he was sitting on the plank.
"Sorry about the warriors," he said. "It looked so simple when I started out, and then I got confused with all the pictures, and it was impossible to stop some of them doing things."
"But it was a famous victory," said Twoflower.
"Was it?"
"Mr. Cohen's been made emperor."
"He has?"
"Well, not made. I mean, no one made him. He just came along and took it. And everyone says he's the pre-incarnation of the first emperor, and he says if you want to be the great wizard, that's fine by him."
"Sorry? You lost me there."
"You led the Red Army, didn't you? You made them rise up in the Empire's hour of need."
"Well, I wouldn't exactly say that I..."
"So the Emperor wants to reward you. Isn't that nice?"
"How do you mean, reward?" said Rincewind, with deep suspicion.
"Not sure, really. Actually, what he said was..." Twoflower's eyes glazed as he tried to recall. "He said, you go and find Rincewind and say he might be a bit of a pillock, but at least he's straight so he can be Chief Wizard of the Empire or whatever he wants to call it, because I don't trust you foreign..." Twoflower squinted upwards as he tried to remember Cohen's precise words. "House of auspicious aspect, scent of pine trees, buggers."
The words trickled into Rincewind's ear, slid up into his brain, and started to bang on the walls.
"Chief Wizard," he said.
"That's what he said. Well, actually, what he said was he wanted you to be a blob of swallow's vomit, but that was because he used the low, sad tone rather than the high, questioning one. He definitely meant wizard."
"Of the whole empire?"
Rincewind stood up.
"Something very bad is about to happen," he said flatly.
The sky was quite blue now. A few citizens had ventured onto the battlefield to tend the wounded and retrieve the dead. Terracotta warriors stood at various angles, motionless as rocks.
"Any minute now," said Rincewind.
"Shouldn't we get back?"
"Probably a meteorite strike," said Rincewind.
Twoflower looked up at the peaceful sky. "You know me," said Rincewind. "Just when I'm getting a grip on something, fate comes along and jumps on my fingers."
"I don't see any meteorites," said Twoflower. "How long do we wait?"
"It'll be something else then," said Rincewind. "Someone will come leaping out, or there'll be an earthquake, or something."
"If you insist," said Twoflower politely. "Do you want to wait for something horrible here, or would you like to go back to the palace and have a bath and change your clothes and then see what happens?"
Rincewind conceded that he might as well await a dreadful fate in comfort.
"There's going to be a feast," said Twoflower. "The Emperor says he's going to teach everyone how to quaff."
They made their way, plank by plank, towards the city.
"You know, I swear you never told me that you were married."
"Oh, I'm sure I did."
I was sorry to hear that your wife,
"Things happen in war. I have two dutiful daughters."
Rincewind opened his mouth to say something, but Twoflower's bright, brittle smile froze the words in his throat. They worked without speaking, picking up the planks behind them and extending the walkway in front.
"Looking on the bright side," said Twoflower, breaking the silence, "the Emperor said you could start your own university if you want."
"No, no, no. Someone hit me with an iron bar, please."
"He said he's well in favour of education, provided no one makes him have one. He's been making proclamations like mad. The eunuchs have threatened to go on strike."
Rincewind's plank dropped onto the mud.
"What is it that eunuchs do," he said, "that they stop doing when they go on strike?"
"Serve food, make the beds, things like that."
"Oh.
They run the Forbidden City, really, but the Emperor talked them round to his point of view."
"Really?"
"He said if they didn't get cracking right now, he'd cut off everything else." I think the ground's firm enough now."
"His own university.
That'd make him Arch-Chancellor. Rincewind the Arch-Chancellor pictured himself visiting Unseen University. He could have a hat with a really big point. He'd be able to be rude to everyone. He tried to stop himself from thinking like that. It'd all go wrong.
"Of course," said Twoflower, "it might be that the bad things have already happened to you. Have you considered that? Perhaps you're due something nice?"
"Oh, don't give me any of that karma stuff," said Rincewind. "The Wheel of Fortune has lost a few spokes where I'm concerned."
"It's worth considering, though," said Twoflower.
"What, that the rest of my life will be peaceful and enjoyable? Sorry, no. You wait. When my back's turned..." And bang.
Twoflower looked around with some interest.
"I don't know why you think your life has been so bad," he said. "We had a lot of fun when we were younger. Hey, do you remember the time when we went over the edge of the world?"
"Often," said Rincewind, "usually around 3 a.m.
"And that time we went on a dragon and it disappeared in mid-air?"
"You know," said Rincewind, "sometimes a whole hour will go by when I don't remember that."
"And that time we were attacked by those people who wanted to kill us?"
"Which of those 149 occasions are you referring to?"
"Character building, that sort of thing," said Twoflower happily. "Made me what I am today."
"Oh, yes," said Rincewind. It was no effort talking to Twoflower. The little man's trusting nature had no concept of sarcasm and a keen ability not to hear things that might upset him.
"Yes, I can definitely say it was that sort of thing made me what I am today too."
They stepped inside the city. The streets were practically empty. Most people had flocked to the huge square in front of the palace. New emperors tended towards displays of generosity. Besides, the news had got around that this one was different and was giving away free pigs.
"I heard him talking about sending envoys to Ankh-Morpork," said Twoflower, as they dripped up the street. "I expect there's going to be a bit of fuss about that."
"Was that man Disembowel Myself Honourably present at the time?" said Rincewind.
"Yes, as a matter of fact."
"When you visited Ankh-Morpork, did you ever meet a man called Dibbler?"
"Oh, yes."
"If those two ever shake hands, I think there might be some sort of explosion."
"But you could go back, I'm sure," said Twoflower. "I mean, your new university will need all sorts of things, and, well, I seem to recall that people in Ankh-Morpork were very keen on gold."
Rincewind gritted his teeth. The image wouldn't go away. of Arch-Chancellor Rincewind buying the Tower of Art and getting them to number all the stones and send it back to Hung Hung, of Arch-Chancellor Rincewind hiring the faculty as college porters, of Arch-Chancellor Rincewind... No!
Pardon?
Don't encourage me to think like that. The moment I think that it's going to be worthwhile, something dreadful will happen. There was a movement behind him, and a knife suddenly pressed against his throat.
"The great blob of swallow's vomit,"
said a voice by his ear. "There," said Rincewind. "You see? Run away. Don't stand there, you bloody idiot. Run!" Twoflower stared for a moment and then turned and scampered away.
"Let him go," said the voice. "It doesn't matter."
Hands pulled him into the alley. He had a vague impression of armour and mud. His captors were skilled in the way of dragging a prisoner so that he had no chance to get a foothold anywhere. Then he was flung onto the cobbles.
"It does not look so great to me,"
said an imperious voice.
"Look up, great wizard."
There was some nervous laughter from the soldiers.
"You fools!"
raged Lord Hong.
"He's just a man. Look at him. Does he look so powerful? He is just a man who has found some old trickery. And we will find out how great he is without his arms and legs."
"Oh," said Rincewind. Lord Hong leaned down. There was mud on his face and a wild glint in his eyes.
"We shall see what your barbarian emperor can do then, won't we?"
He indicated the sullen group of mud-encrusted soldiers.
"You know, they half believe you really are a great wizard. That's superstition, I'm afraid. Very useful most of the time, damn inconvenient on occasion. But when we march you into the square and show them how great you really are, I think your barbarian will not have so very long left. What are these?"
He snatched the gloves off Rincewind's hands. "Toys," he said. "Made things. The Red Army are just machines like mills and pumps. There's no magic there." He tossed them aside and nodded at one of the guards.
"And now," said Lord Hong, "let us go to the Imperial Square."